It's Wednesday, August 4th. He said wait for the facts. Well, investigators say we got him. We start here. An investigation from his own state's attorney general says yes, Andrew Cuomo is a serial harasser.
The governor also several times inappropriately touched a state trooper assigned to the unit to protect the governor.
Former allies are now calling for the New York governor to resign. Can he even last through the end of the day? Meanwhile, America's largest city says all those loosened restrictions are now for vaccinated people only.
If they want to enjoy life again, they will have to be vaccinated.
A ton of COVID headlines to break down. We'll walk you through them. And we knew these airlines had baggage, but not like this.
Bottom line, if you're flying this summer or into the fall, you need to have flexibility.
Why hundreds of flights are now being canceled every day and why more could be on the way. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. When a huge scandal breaks about a major public figure, it often feels like stuff happens right away, or it doesn't happen at all. A politician is forced to resign, a business leader is ousted, or maybe they aren't. And when you hear officials say, "Everyone hold your horses, we're just going to take our time and investigate this," that can sound like a dodge, right? Like they're trying to buy time or sweep it under the rug.
To other major news this Monday evening, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Well, several months ago, a cascade of new allegations came forth against New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Under fire and under investigation tonight, facing accusations of sexual harassment.
At least 11 have accused the governor since March, including former executive assistant Charlotte Bennett, telling CBS he asked her about her sexual assault experience.
He asked if I had trouble enjoying being with someone.
He should resign. He should resign.
Some of the state's most powerful Democrats called on him to resign, but he didn't. And eventually we were told there's going to be an investigation, everyone. Just hold on.
The independent investigation has concluded that Governor Andrew Cuomo sexually harassed multiple women and in doing so violated federal and state law.
Yesterday, New York Attorney General Letitia James unveiled the findings of that investigation. And these conclusions were not watered down. These were not a slow walk. If anything, these conclusions were more damning than the political world expected. And now Cuomo finds himself perhaps on the brink of resignation. Let's go straight to ABC's Ariel Reshef there in Albany, New York. Ariel, this report is not just saying it looks pretty bad or these are serious allegations. They're saying he did it, that Andrew Cuomo sexually harassed women. Can you walk me through these findings?
Yeah, sure, Brad. These are sweeping conclusions. This report focuses on the allegations from 11 women, including current and former staff, a state trooper, and an energy executive.
The governor also several times inappropriately touched a state trooper assigned to the unit to protect the governor. In an elevator, while standing behind the trooper, he ran his finger from her neck down her spine and said, "Hey, you." Another time, she was standing holding the door open for the governor. As he passed, he took his open hand and ran it across her stomach from her belly button to where the hip where she keeps her gun.
It also finds that Governor Cuomo engaged in unwanted and inappropriate groping.
The governor hugged executive assistant number one and reached under her blouse to grab her breast.
Kissing, hugging, and comments that accusers called deeply humiliating, uncomfortable, offensive, or inappropriate.
Such as the governor repeatedly asking executive assistant number one whether she would cheat on her husband, saying to her, "If you were single, the things I would do to you."
It also alleges that Governor Cuomo and his senior staff took actions to retaliate against at least one of the former employees who had come forward.
As another complainant testified, and I quote, "What makes it so hard to describe every single inappropriate incident is the culture of the place."
Finally, there are claims that the governor and his executive chamber fostered a toxic workplace environment that allowed harassment to occur.
On the one hand, he makes all this inappropriate and creepy behavior normal and like you should not complain. On the other hand, you see people getting punished and screamed at if you do anything where you disagree with him or his top aides.
This investigation has revealed conduct that corrodes the very fabric and character of our state government.
The team assembled by the New York State Attorney General Letitia James spoke to 179 people over the course of 5 months, collecting 74,000 pieces of evidence.
And I am inspired by all the brave women who came forward. But more importantly, I believe them.
This was a painstaking investigation, and we saw those conclusions come out, surprising many in the political world and beyond.
Well, so what was the response from Cuomo? Because you could tell that his office clearly was alerted to what these findings would be, because he released a pre-recorded statement. What is his defense, as it were?
Well, this was consistent Cuomo. His attorney's issuing an 85-page rebuttal calling this investigation utterly biased.
And the facts are much different than what has been portrayed.
And we saw in a pre-recorded message that he denied any inappropriate touching and said it simply never happened.
That is just not who I am.
He said that any of these embraces that you may have seen in the media that have essentially vilified him were consistent with him just wanting to convey a sense of warmth.
I do kiss people on the forehead. I do kiss people on the cheek. I do kiss people on the hand. I do embrace people. I do hug people, men and women. I do on occasion say, ciao, Bella.
During that presentation, he showed photos of politicians and luminaries like Michelle Obama and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez embracing other people, saying, nothing to see here. This is commonplace. This is
He's showing people hugging each other, but the report isn't just saying, like, you hug someone too long. He's saying you reached under someone's shirt, right? Like, did he address that?
Well, he has said that he never inappropriately touched anyone, and he acknowledged that his office is a difficult place to work because there are rigorous hours, and he said it's unlike other political offices. There's no 9-to-5 here.
I now understand that there are generational or cultural perspectives that, frankly, I hadn't fully appreciated. And I have learned from this.
But again, Brad, he has said he has never inappropriately touched anyone, and he says a lot of his conversations with some of his staffers have been misconstrued in this case, specifically when he was responding to the allegations from Charlotte Bennett. He says that he was just trying to help her cope with a previous sexual harassment because he himself has a family member who's dealt with sexual harassment. He's clearly denying any inappropriate behavior and giving his reasoning for why he believes that he's been falsely accused.
Right. And it's interesting because, you know, throughout the Me Too movement, there have been people saying, well, you know, this was a different time and this person had different sensibilities. They were raised differently. Some of these accusations were from last year, like well after Andrew Cuomo himself had aligned himself with the Me Too movement. So I guess I'm wondering what this means for Cuomo himself and perhaps the larger Democratic Party.
He's at a crossroads at this point. Cuomo's support has essentially eroded from every top Democrat.
Are you now calling on him to resign?
Yes.
The president himself, the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, two senators from his state.
I think these actions are inappropriate for the governor of the governor of New York State, and I do believe he should resign.
We also saw the Assembly Speaker say it's abundantly clear that Cuomo has lost the confidence of the Assembly's Democratic majority, and he can no longer remain in office. And that is the body that would undertake impeachment proceedings. The governor and his aides essentially know that, unlike with the federal system, impeachment here in Albany is the ball game, meaning that if a governor is impeached, he has to step back temporarily from his duties to mount a defense in the Senate. And insiders believe that if Cuomo really faces that possibility, then there is a potential that he could, in fact, resign.
Right. For the tone of his initial response, you'd think there's no way this man is resigning. And yet, it's not nearly as clear this morning that that's still the case. Meanwhile, we'll see if there are any criminal charges that could come out of this. Doesn't look that way for now. In fact, most of these allegations would not necessarily be considered criminal behavior. Cuomo, of course, denying any sexual misconduct, full stop. Ariel Reshef there in Albany. Thank you.
No problem.
Next up on Start Here, it's been all or nothing. Everyone gets to eat indoors or no one does. Well, in one city, that just changed. The vaccination dividing line after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got
the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So you just had this bombshell in New York, but in fact, just hours prior, New York City had also just created its own stir by becoming the first city government in the nation to do this.
Starting in mid-August, New York City will become the first in the nation to mandate vaccinations for most indoor activities.
We've seen companies tell employees they have to get the vaccine, but this is a government telling residents, if you want to do some of the basic stuff we told you as reopening a few months ago, eating indoors, going to a movie theater, well, that is now only available to vaccinated people.
This approach is going to make clear. You want to enjoy everything great in this summer of New York City? Go get vaccinated.
It's a big step, and it's only one of several big steps yesterday in the fight against COVID. So let's check in with Dr. John Brownstein, epidemiologist at Harvard University, chief innovation officer at Boston Children's Hospital, and an ABC News contributor. Dr. Brownstein, if it's dangerous enough for unvaccinated people to eat a meal indoors, vaccinated people can eat indoors? What is your reaction to a plan like this?
You know, I think it starts to really make sense. You know, we have seen steps by the federal government, by businesses, to make life better for those who are vaccinated and life harder for those who are unvaccinated. And so this is a bit of a domino effect. And we're seeing this, of course, in places of business.
President Biden urging the private sector to require vaccinations.
This isn't easy, but I will have their backs. In the backs of other private public sector leaders, if they take such steps.
But it's also going to be in people's social lives. If they want to enjoy life again, to go to restaurants, go to fitness centers, then, you know, they will have to be vaccinated, because we know that there's a risk of transmission that exists in communities, even among highly vaccinated populations. And so if we're going to get to the other end of the pandemic, we're going to have to take these measures. And this is sort of the next step in that, you know, process to making sure we can get back to that normal life.
Protests across Europe as countries move to allow only vaccinated people and those with a negative COVID test access to certain venues.
If you look at a country like France, they've enacted this across their entire population. And yes, there's been pushback, but we can recognize that this is a place of where we're headed to.
And French President Emmanuel Macron saying to those who refuse to be vaccinated, it's time you stay at home, not us.
So if you look at here in New York City, that makes sense. We will probably likely see this in many other cities across this country.
We believe as this kind of approach grows, and you're seeing it starting to happen now in the private sector and other areas, it's going to become more and more the norm. We want it to become the norm. I'm taking this action in part to inspire others to follow suit.
I guess there are two concerns that immediately come up from critics of this plan. One is, it's not the restaurant telling you you can't come in. It's the government being like, let's see your vaccination card or something. And two is, there's a lot of people unvaccinated in this country with through no choice of their own, like, you know, 10 and 11-year-olds. Can a family not actually go to a dinner indoors with their 11-year-old under this plan? Do we know?
So the view I have on this is that many businesses want to actually enact this, but they have fear of retribution, of losing customers.
They have hygiene measures in place, but won't mandate vaccine status unless health officials require it.
My employees are just starting to make good income and decent income, at least.
And so looking to the government for cover, essentially, to provide these tools to allow for them to remain open and reduce the fear and anxiety that they may have to close because of another surge, this is sort of where we're headed.
And much of the business community is applauding the program, especially the hospitality industry.
Well, I think it's the right move. I think it should be done at the federal government level.
And yes, we're going to need to have special circumstances. There are many people that cannot receive the vaccine for whatever reason. It's a small number, but they exist. And of course, those who are not eligible are kids. And so I think we'll see as these plans unfold, you know, the exceptions that will be made for those that can't yet receive the vaccine.
The decision was made by the CDC and the ACIP that right now, today, we don't need the general public who's been vaccinated to get a booster, but that could change.
Well, so the vaccine's super effective against COVID-19. Is there a sense, though, that we're going to need booster shots sooner rather than later? Because just yesterday, San Francisco, major hospital, San Francisco General, announces to anyone who got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, effectively, hey, come on down, we'll give you a second dose of a different vaccine. They're not calling it a booster, but they're effectively saying what? It'll boost your immunity?
You know, boosters are, you know, the number one topic right now. Of any question I'm getting, do I need a booster? Am I eligible?
By the end of the week, people who got the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be able to get a second shot of either Pfizer or Moderna at San Francisco General Hospital.
There's been this overall concern about J&J, and there's been mixed data, but ultimately we have seen that this vaccine is working incredibly well around what we care about most, hospitalizations and deaths. Interestingly, there was this recommendation from a San Francisco hospital that those who have had J&J to get an mRNA booster.
We are not recommending, we are accommodating requests. We have gotten a few requests based on patients talking to their physicians, and that's why we are allowing for the accommodation.
Now, I really want to make it clear, Brad, that this is outside of CDC guidance, and it's not any FDA approval around this. And so we want to be super clear that, you know, the vaccines that people have taken are doing what they need to do, which is really protect the population. And it's the unvaccinated people that continue to be the main hosts for virus spread in the population.
Hey, and last question, real quick, just because it's another major decision here, and it's something we've been covering extensively. The Biden White House had said, you know, they had this eviction moratorium that was based on public health was the reasoning. Well, then the Supreme Court said you can't keep extending lists like this. Congress is like, you didn't tell us that we had to put something together, White House. What are you doing?
The CDC taking action to limit evictions as people struggle in the pandemic.
The court's already ruled on the present eviction moratorium.
Now, after several days, the White House says they are once again halting certain evictions. And once again, they're saying it's on public health grounds. What is going on?
You know, I think we have to be really careful in a pandemic where we are in the middle of a new surge. You know, we are heading towards record hospitalizations in many states.
This is a 60-day extension lasting until October 3rd. It targets areas that have been hit hard by COVID-19. Congressional sources who were briefed on this say that it is expected to cover 90% of Americans.
And so if you get into a position where you are forcing people out of their homes, we know that increased mobility and additional gatherings indoors among people, that is what will drive transmission. And so as a way to protect people, obviously to keep them in their homes and safe, this makes a lot of sense. And it's really pure public health guidance at this point.
Yeah, the Supreme Court was basically like, hey, the CDC, the Biden administration, does have jurisdiction over some public health crises, but economic fairness is not one of them. That should be up to Congress. Well, now the Biden administration is saying, at least in certain areas, we are back in a public health crisis. And they say, even if this does get held up in the courts, at least that will buy renters a little bit more time. Dr. John Brownstein, thank you.
Thank you.
Now, amid all the COVID news, there's also a renewed sense of confusion among travelers. Like, should I be flying right now? Should I not? For those that do decide to travel, man, it is stressful in the skies right now.
The Federal Aviation Administration say there have now been more than 3,700 reports of unruly passengers since the start of 2021. And included in those reports is a violent incident that happened during a Frontier Airlines flight from Philadelphia to Miami just last week.
This weekend, a Frontier Airlines passenger became agitated when flight attendants stopped serving him alcohol. He allegedly sexually assaulted two of them and punched a third and was then duct taped to his chair. And as much as his neighbors might have been applauding this, this is not Frontier Airlines policy. These flight attendants were suspended. The union is demanding they be reinstated. But if that wasn't all wild enough, there's another layer to all this for travelers right now.
Hundreds of people waiting in line, many of them spending the night here, sleeping with their families on the ground.
Flights are being canceled by the hundreds.
I can't even check my bags. I can't go back to a hotel. I can't do nothing. And I'm just stuck here.
Sam Sweeney is ABC's lead transportation producer. And Sam, this is like a ton of flights over the last few days. How widespread an issue are these cancellations becoming?
This is massive. Hundreds of flights from Spirit, Southwest, and American. They're the big three that are really getting hit hard by this. On Monday alone, 71% of Spirit's flights were canceled. By midday on Tuesday, more than 55% of Spirit's flights were canceled. And at the same time, Southwest saw more than 100 of its flights canceled.
Wow. So why? Like, why is this happening?
You can't really turn an airline off and then flip the switch back on. And that's really what happened over the last year. American Airlines, Southwest, and now Spirit are all in this boat where they put more flights on their schedule than they really could handle because of staffing issues.
There's one cancellation after another.
They have to get pilots back into these simulators. There's only a certain number of simulators available. They're running them around the clock, training flight attendants, getting them back into the aircraft. Now, so many of these older flight attendants that have been there for years, they took early retirement packages. Well, now flying is roaring back. We just broke a record on Sunday, 2.2 million people flying.
Spirit Airlines said in a statement that they are working around the clock to get back on track.
And now they have to get these planes staffed, and they can only do it so fast. And it's even down to the reservation agents answering the phone. If you call, there could be hours long waits because they can't get people into these jobs.
It's really sad because they don't have the crew. It seems like it's just like everything else. Our country is in turmoil.
This is really the perfect storm for Spirit in particular. They're dealing with staffing issues, IT issues, and weather from over the weekend that is now causing this ripple effect into the midweek. Spirit is really restarting their entire operation, trying to get pilots and flight attendants to certain places, moving their planes around. And they're really having a summer meltdown, according to people who are familiar with the operation.
What does this mean for individual flyers then? Like, if you got a ticket, are you likely to show up at the airport and then find out your flight's been canceled, or how is this working?
Bottom line, if you're flying this summer or into the fall, you need to have flexibility because you may book a ticket and then get an email within hours or weeks or days saying, sorry, that 8 o'clock a.m. departure, well, now it's going to be 1 p.m. getting you in later on in the day, and you're going to miss that whole day because our flight schedule has changed. That's what so many people are seeing, but you can use that to your advantage. Mm. If you do get moved and it's more than 3 or 4 hours, and say you were on a connecting flight, but now you found a direct flight, chances are that airline will move you free of charge.
Right. We talked about confusion with Spirit and Southwest. These companies are not named Delta, right? That's another point of confusion in the skies right now. You're terrified of the Delta variant and you're flying on an airline. Delta just had an earnings call yesterday and said they have not been impacted by that whatsoever financially. Sam Sweeney, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, drink up if your favorite drink still exists. One Last Thing is next.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially 4 trials facing former President Trump as he makes his 3rd bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. It's the perfect time of year for a nice cold drink, but over the last several days, some of your favorite bubbly beverages might have fallen flat. Recently, the mega beer company Molson Coors announced it's going to retire nearly a dozen budget beers. These are labels like Milwaukee's Best Premium, Keystone Ice, Miller High Life Light, stuff that's usually the cheap option at the bar. That's because of a strategy Coors calls premiumization, swapping out cheap beer for higher-end liquor and hard seltzer products. Problem is, hard seltzer might have already lost its buzz.
Apparently, it is not a hard seltzer summer, folks.
You don't have to have an advanced degree to go into a liquor store these days, and you can see there's a lot of seltzer sitting around.
On an earnings call last week, Boston Beer, which has invested heavily in seltzer, says its earnings have been steadily falling off. There are 2 reasons, they said. 1, giants like Anheuser-Busch are flooding the market with seltzers, and 2, people are going back to bars. They're not picking up White Claws on their way to a picnic. Instead, they're ordering whatever's on tap, and that's often beer. The big decisions aren't limited to alcohol brands either.
Tropicana Pure Premium Orange Juice has only one ingredient.
Yesterday, PepsiCo announced it's selling off Tropicana Orange Juice because it's not healthy enough. That's right. The soda brand says it wants to streamline its inventory, get rid of high sugar drinks, and focus more on zero-calorie beverages and health foods. Coca-Cola has outlined a similar strategy, but it does not appear Coke and Pepsi themselves are going anywhere. So what I'm hearing is more beers with vitamin C, and then everyone's going to be set, right? It works for me. Ratings and reviews are our go-go juice, as always. So hit us up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen. Hit those stars. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.